I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. This episode contains explicit language.
I think I'm at the part of my life where I'm just reflecting on all of the experiences that I've had. A few years ago turned 40, and I call it my shameless 40s, where I'm just like living without shame, because I'm figuring out that a lot of the shame that I carried was put on me by like culture, family, experiences, and it's not mine to carry. And so I'm like shedding that shame.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Quick note before we get started, this Wednesday, October 25th, is World Pasta Day. And to celebrate, I'm going to be making a big, major announcement. I'll drop a special message right here in the podcast feed. I'll put it on social media. It's going to be very, very exciting. That's this Wednesday. All right, let's get into it. On today's show, we're talking with Yawande Komolafa, a chef and recipe developer in Brooklyn. Yawande has a new cookbook out called My Everyday Lagos, which includes her take on some classic Nigerian dishes and some more modern variations. Nigeria is a place that Yawande once thought of as home. But as you may recall from an episode we did with her in 2018, when she moved to the U.S., she ended up losing her immigration status through no fault of her own. That meant she had to hide a part of herself. It meant she couldn't go back. And it led her to ask, when you have to hide a part of who you are, how do you connect with the taste of a place you used to call home? Today, we're going to re-air that original episode. Then afterwards, we'll share a new conversation with Yawande that we taped just a few weeks ago on the eve of the release of her first cookbook. Let's start at the beginning of her story. Yawande was born in Germany to Nigerian parents. They moved back to Nigeria when she was very little, so she grew up in Lagos, the country's biggest city. Looking back on her life in Nigeria, a career in food seems almost inevitable. After all, it runs in her family.
My mom's a food scientist, so I remember like growing up in test kitchens with her testing recipes and like using us as her little taste testers. I remember being surrounded by like candy all the time because my mom worked for a chocolate company. And I just thought that that's how kids grew up, like surrounded by candy all the time. My grandmother would cook and like have the whole family over, including my extended family. She had like a big outdoor kitchen. There were stories. I never met my dad's mom, but there were stories of her running a restaurant in her little village. So women in my family always cooked. And I remember being really interested in food and thinking that I was also going to be a food scientist. And so when I signed up for college, I signed up to be a biochem major, but really hated chemistry. And then decided to go to culinary arts school after college.
So you started going down the road of food scientist, but you were sort of like, do you have anything with like less science and more eating?
And like more eating or more, you know, like more like cooler looking, you know, more creative in that way.
And so do you like when you're working in the kitchen testing recipes, do you call your mom? You guys compare notes?
We do. Yeah, it's actually one of our favorite things to do. It's a way that we bond now through talking about food. Because I haven't been back to Nigeria in a really long time, a lot of our conversations sometimes surround me trying to pull from memory, like encountering a food or a spice or a seasoning here and saying, I remember this from Nigeria. It tastes like this. Like, what is it called?
Yawande came to the U.S. from Nigeria when she was 16 to attend the University of Maryland. She came legally on a student visa. After she graduated, she enrolled at the Baltimore International College of Culinary Studies. A new school means a new student visa. But 2 years after starting there, there was a problem. Yawande didn't enroll in summer classes, and an administrator at the school took that to mean that Yawande was no longer enrolled there, period.
The administrator was not experienced with dealing with international students. Like, you know, it was a small school in Baltimore, Maryland. And so she deleted my account for whatever reason. And that's how I lost my documentation here.
Wait, so you were here legally. You were a student. You had the student visa, mm-hmm. and some person just like in a bursar's office? Hit delete?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
What was it like when you figured out that that had happened?
What was it like? Gosh. Shock. I realized that I was dealing with someone who had no concept of what she had just done. I realized how, like, my entire life depended on, like, pressing a button.
And would you talk to this person about it? Like,
oh, man, I did. I remember going into the office, and, I mean, I don't yell a lot. But I remember, like, screaming at her and, like, losing my shit at her. But there was still no recognition or acknowledgement of what she had done. And so it was up to me to get reinstated. And I didn't get reinstated. Like, I applied, went through the whole process, and then waited about a year to hear back from them. But I didn't get reinstated.
We tried to confirm Yuande's story with that culinary school in Baltimore or get a comment from them, but the school no longer exists. As far as we know, the woman who messed up Yuande's visa never faced any repercussions. And clearly, the school had a lot of issues. In 2011, it lost its accreditation. When this visa debacle happened, Yuande essentially fell into a bureaucratic abyss that she couldn't crawl out of. So you stayed here and you were left undocumented.
Yes. So I decided to stay because at that time, I felt like going back to Nigeria was not really the option that I wanted to pursue. I had all my legal documents because I came here legally. I was still able to work because I had a social security number and I had a driver's license. I was still able to sort of be legal here, but I just couldn't leave the country. And if I left the country, it meant that I wouldn't come back at all.
Yuande felt like she had come to America to pursue her dream of a career in food, and she wasn't ready to give that up. So she threw herself into her work. She spent long hours in high-end kitchens, cooking mostly French and American dishes.
I took a huge break from Nigerian food, and I wasn't really interested in cooking. I really was eager to learn about the food of the country that I was living in and get exposed to other cuisines.
Meanwhile, Yuande was navigating life in America as an undocumented immigrant.
It made it harder to talk about being Nigerian, and it made it harder to share, like, my being Nigerian.
So to move ahead in her career, Yuande ended up cooking less Nigerian food. To stay in the country, she had to talk less about where she came from. In other words, without even fully realizing it, she had to act less Nigerian. She went on like this for more than 10 years. Her parents were able to come here to visit, and her brother moved here, but she couldn't go there. Finally, it caught up with her.
I couldn't go back to Nigeria for so long. And the one thing that I knew I had was food. And so exploring Nigeria and exploring my memory of it, the safest place for me to go was food.
Yuande decided to try to recreate some part of Nigeria in her kitchen. So she started gathering the staples. Now, traditionally, a lot of Nigerian dishes start with a base sauce of bell peppers, tomatoes, onions, and habanero chilies. There are also a lot of funky, fermented flavors that come from fermented fish and fermented locust beans. That funk is a real hallmark of Nigerian cuisine. It's the kind of thing that, if you're not accustomed to it, it can take some getting used to. But if you grew up with it, you can't live without it. Yuande made cassava. It's also known as yuca. It's a starchy root vegetable, somewhat similar to a potato. She also cooked lentils, plantains, and papaya.
It was a very private thing. I think a lot of it had to do with, like, the fear and anxiety surrounding not being able to go back. And so when I did cook Nigerian food, it was always at home in, like, the privacy of my own kitchen. And if anybody was coming over, like, that's what they were going to have. But it wasn't really something that I wanted to cook at a restaurant or wanted to share with, like, the larger world.
Around the same time that Yawande was reconnecting with her Nigerian-ness, she was reminded of just how dangerous that could be for her. I should say, Yawande is black, and she started dating a white guy, an American.
One time we were in Marfa, driving through Marfa.
In Texas.
In Texas. And we got stopped by an immigration officer because it's really close to the border. And I was like, this is it. My life is over. And Mark's just like, don't say anything. Like, let me handle it. To me, like, law enforcement is like, speak only when you're spoken to. Like, don't make jokes with them. But when Mark relates to them, it's just like, oh, yeah, it's that guy. And, you know, the officer comes and he's like, what are you guys doing here? Mark's like, we're just driving to this ranch. Our friend owns a ranch right there on the border. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know that ranch. And they start talking about this place. And like the whole time I'm just like sunglasses on, like, don't even look at him. Don't say anything. And he let us go.
While Yawande was dealing with incidents like that in the outside world, she was still cooking Nigerian food for friends at home. But she thought of those dishes as totally separate from the fine dining food she was making at work. Then she realized she could use her training and experience in these high-end kitchens to shape her idea of Nigerian food. At home, in her kitchen, she began experimenting. She turned fufu, a traditional pounded yam dish that's eaten with Nigerian stews, into a dish like polenta, cooked with chicken broth, milk, and parmesan. She served cassava as a salad, topped with lime and cilantro. Then she and Mark went on another road trip.
We had driven to Vermont that summer and came back with like 2 frozen goat legs.
Like you do.
As you do when you're in Vermont.
Yeah, natch. <You know?
laughs> And so my mom came and I'm like, we should just have a big dinner where I cook with my mom and like, you know, share. Goat is like one of my favorite meats to eat. And so my mom seasoned the goat and she, you know, put all her spices on it and, you know, let it marinate. And it also happened to be right around the time of the election.
That's Trump's election in 2016.
And I really wanted to be more vocal about being an immigrant just because of the way the administration paints the picture of immigrants, like I'm one of those people. And so I really felt the need to speak up.
It almost sounds like a superhero origin story. Follow me here. Yawande has this superpower, but she has to keep it to herself. Then she starts sharing it in private, and she gets better, grows more powerful. Finally, when the world needs her most, she decides she's not going to keep her Nigerian cooking and her identity secret any longer. She steps into a phone booth and comes out ready to fight for truth, justice, and the American way, which in this case means hosting 60 people for dinner in her and Mark's loft apartment and talking openly about her experience as an immigrant. But whenever a superhero goes public with their powers, there's always a question. Will they be accepted? What will people think? Well, the dinner was a huge success. It became a regular event. Every month or so, Yawande hosted a dinner open to the public where she shared her food and her story. She called it My Immigrant Food Is. Most of the people who came weren't familiar with Nigerian food, so she did make certain accommodations.
If it was up to me, I would like explode people's palates. But I also don't. I want them to enjoy the food, and it's hard to enjoy it if it's too hot.
Right.
And so, like, the way I deal with that is, like, if I add heat, then add something like mint to be refreshing and to cool, you know, so or serve something with, like, coconut milk at the end of the course so it's, like, cooling. And I like that game that I play with, like, exploring ingredients and, like, trying to push them to whatever limit that I see fit. And I think that my approach to Nigerian food is also my approach to being Nigerian. I was born in Berlin. I lived in Nigeria. You know, we moved back to Nigeria speaking German. I think that the question of how Nigerian I am has always been a part of my story, like having to prove how Nigerian I was. And so I think I approach Nigerian food in the same way that, like, I'm going to cook it. I'm going to cook it the way that's telling of my experience, and it's going to be Nigerian.
Yawande says hosting that first dinner changed everything.
It felt freeing. It felt like I didn't have to avoid questions. Because what's also interesting is that I don't know that people know about the immigration process here. It's sort of like, oh, this person moved here and they're now living the American dream. And, you know, I'm always like, well, what was their process like? You know, like how many years did it take for like their paperwork to be legal? Or, you know, like none of that gets told.
And well, I'm sure it's probably, there's a certain irony in the fact that I think in some ways immigrants know more about America than Americans do.
Yeah.
Yes, over the years, Ywande has become a real expert in our immigration laws in particular. She and Mark did get married, but marriage doesn't guarantee you a green card. It's still a long, hard process. You have to provide tons of documents to show that your marriage is real. Joint lease, shared bank account, shared utility bills, holiday cards addressed to both of you, photos of you with your spouse and your families. And it's expensive. There are single forms that cost $500 or $1,000 just to file, plus legal fees. Ywande says it took more than a year and cost about $5,000 total. But in the fall of 2017, it happened. She got her green card.
Is it actually a card?
It's like plastic.
don't leave it in your pants expecting. When you wash your pants. Can you imagine?
It's like this plastic green card.
I thought it at least come like in a, does it come in a nice box?
No. It came in a thing that said "Welcome to America." I'm like, I've been in America, you asshole. like, welcome to America? I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. But, you know, so I'm processing what it means that I now have this thing that says I could be here.
But she didn't feel like she was out of the woods. That's because green card holders are not fully shielded from deportation, according to Alejandra Molina, a reporter I spoke with who covers immigration. She said that in the political climate when Ywande got her green card in 2017, many people with permanent resident status worried it wasn't enough. The Trump administration worked to find more ways to deport people through policy changes and executive orders, people who, before Trump, would have been allowed to stay. For Ywande, clearly having a green card was better than not having one, but it didn't feel the way she expected.
What's surprising to me on the flip side of getting my green card is that the behaviors of like anxiety and fear don't immediately exit. You know, I still think that like if I'm in an airport, there's a chance that I could get picked up. You know, like that thought takes a while to dissipate. And it takes a while to like understand that like I'm allowed to be here.
And now you have a green card.
Mm-hmm.
You can come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to go?
Nigeria.
Coming up, Ywande's trip back to Nigeria. Then later, we hear how all her travels informed her new cookbook. Stick around.
Delicious word from our sponsors.
In the Pashman household, we're already big fans of Tillamook shredded cheese. In fact, I used it in developing many recipes in my cookbook, and now I'm getting into their ice cream. Tillamook ice cream is made with more cream, so you get smooth and dreamy scoops each time. You may not realize it, but this is why a lot of the store-bought ice cream doesn't taste the same as what you get in an ice cream parlor. But with Tillamook, they don't skimp on the cream. These people know dairy, okay? Tillamook makes a great rich vanilla ice cream with real crushed vanilla bean seeds. They have an Oregon strawberry, sweet strawberry ice cream with ripe Oregon strawberry pieces. The one that I really love is the mudslide flavor, smooth chocolate ice cream with a ribbon of rich fudge and chocolatey chips. You want to move the spoon around to get fudgy and chocolatey chips and the ice cream all in the same bite each time, and it's just so, so nice. And like I said, I just trust Tillamook when it comes to dairy. They make over 200 different dairy products, and the brand is farmer-owned and led by dairy experts. Find Tillamook ice cream near you at tillamook.com. That's TILLAMOOK.com. The weather's warming up. Have you nailed down your summer travel plans yet? I can tell you, we're working on ours and things are booking up, which is why you should be thinking about Norwegian Cruise Line. They have been raising the standards of cruising for more than 55 years. Let me tell you, when you cruise with NCL, you get award-winning specialty restaurants, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. Now look, one of the great things about cruises in general is that you can visit and explore all kinds of different destinations, all with the ease of unpacking your bag just once. But Norwegian Cruise Line, they take cruising to another level, and they take food to another level. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. They have an incredible variety of truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Listen to this. There are up to 8 complimentary and 9 specialty dining options per ship and up to 23 bar and lounge options. Come see why NCL's guest first philosophy means exceptional service and unforgettable memories. Book your next vacation at ncl.com. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Are you ready for warmer weather? I know I am. But is your wardrobe ready? I just stocked up on spring and summer clothing at Quince. And let me tell you something. I'm feeling great about everything I got. I got a couple of short sleeve button down shirts, polo shirt, some shorts. Everything feels great. It's super high quality. And I can't believe how much stuff I got at a reasonable price. Quince has all the seasonal must-haves like 100% European linen shirts from $30, performance polos, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Whatever you need for the spring and summer, Quince has your back. Upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/sporkful for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sporkful to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sporkful. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. Last week on the show, we had a lot of fun taking a spin through some food hot topics, another one of our salad spinner episodes. We talked about the group of 20-somethings living in a hacker house who created a fake steakhouse in New York City, and Juicy Couture's strange collab with Kraft Mayo. I feel like I'm going to get myself a mayo jacket, and I'm going to get some blue bottle coffee New Balances, and I'm just going to walk
around. You need a whole outfit. You need a tie, a hat.
I'll walk around my tub of ranch dressing ice cream.
And you'll be the weirdest hype beast ever.
Listen to the episode to hear about other pressing news from the world of food, including Taylor Swift's list of food demands backstage at her concerts. That one's up now. Check it out. Okay, back to Yawande Komolafa, author of the new cookbook, My Everyday Lagos. After receiving her green card in 2017, Yawande was finally able to travel back to Nigeria with her husband, Mark. She flew to Lagos, Nigeria's biggest city, where her family lives.
What was really weird to me was that I got on a plane and that was taking me out of the U.S. And it wasn't eventful, it wasn't dramatic, and it was kind of disappointing. Like, I don't know what I imagined, but, like, I wanted it to, like, is that how people do it? They just get on a plane and go to, like, another country? Is that what happens?
So they got out of the airport, found Yawande's parents, all good. Then they went out to eat. This would be Yawande's first bite of Nigerian food in Nigeria in 18 years.
There was a dish called Nkobi. It's a cow foot that's, like, cooked until, like, the tendons are really soft, and then it's pulled off the bone and tossed with, like, a palm oil and, like, shrimp and locust bean, just, like, very intense flavors. And it makes a kind of sauce or to coat it. And then, like, you know, the color is also just, like, bright orange when it comes to the table. And I like tasting that dish just felt like, oh, wow, like I'm in Lagos, you know, like I'm here.
Ywande had been away for so long. Her memory of the flavors had faded, taken on a sepia tone. Now she was experiencing those tastes in vivid hues, like when Dorothy lands in Oz and everything goes from black and white to Technicolor.
Everything was so spicy. I think I forgot how spicy Nigerian food is. And everything was so flavorful. It was salty and it was like a lot of fermented flavors and a lot of sour flavors. Everything was served with a chili oil. Like, I feel like I had been searching for that spice all my life.
Before this trip, Ywande talked about trying to balance the spice in her Nigerian cooking, using mint or coconut milk. She says now,
I suddenly think of, like, my Nigerian cooking as too subtle. I mean, gosh, the flavors that I tasted there were just, like, everything hit my palate. If it was spice, it was fermented, it was smoked, it, you know, just everything was intense. Now, in thinking of Nigerian cooking, I want to add that intensity to it. Like, I want to hit people's palates the way my palate was hit in Nigeria, because, like, to me, like, that's Nigerian cooking.
How will this trip change your dinners?
I made a chili oil when I got back, and I made it with, like, I got fermented locust bean, ginger, garlic, and the chilies. And I have a huge, like, mason jar of it in my fridge. And I'm going to serve that alongside every course. I think also, like, another element that I really enjoyed was, like, the passing around of food and, like, the sharing of food and not necessarily having plated food. But I love, like, large platters of food and you get to, like, pass them around. Because I think it also just encourages conversation and, like, it eases people up. It's like you can't really say no to, like, a plate of, like, millet salad that's coming your way. You know, you can, but I say don't say no to that.
You know? Ywande will judge you, is what she's saying.
Totally. I can see you from the kitchen.
After talking about all that amazing Nigerian food, I really wanted to go to Ywande's next dinner. But it was the night of my daughter's birthday. So our friend Rachel Bongiorno went instead. Ywande estimates that only about 10% of the people who come to her dinners have a lot of familiarity with Nigerian food. So the big question was, how would people react to Ywande's new, more intense flavors? Ywande and Mark welcomed everyone.
So there's
no seating arrangement. So
yeah, so feel free to seat yourselves. There's a Hungarian rosé that a friend of ours imports. Do you guys want to talk about the soup?
The soup is a mango consommé. It's mango and habanero chilies. It's habanero chilies.
In case you couldn't hear Ywande describing that first course, it was a mango soup with habanero chilies, served with calabash nutmeg crackers. She says calabash nutmeg is a smokier, milder type of nutmeg. After that, there was whole roasted fish with yaji spice relish. Yaji is a ground spice blend used to season suya, which is basically Nigerian barbecue. Then there was pea shoots with braised beef cheeks and fermented cassava cake. And for dessert, roasted pineapple and Salim pepper ice cream. Salim pepper is a type of black pepper found in parts of Africa. After the meal, Rachel talked with the diners, and pretty much everyone said the same thing. The food was really spicy. And that's what they loved about it.
It was unexpected because you didn't necessarily taste the spice initially. It was a few seconds later, and it really brought the dishes together.
I mean, I'm a professional chef, and I've been in the industry for 20 years, and I still was kind of like, yam, cassavas, like stews, right? Dried fish. Like, I don't really know. Like, it's a part of the world that I don't really know deeply.
The flavors of Ywande's food have definitely become bolder since she came back from Nigeria, which I love. It was amazing before, but it's just so much more now since she got back, and I'm super excited about it.
I feel like I've been floating for about 10 years, and I think I was hoping to feel more grounded and to, like, understand both where I come from and myself. I needed something about being Nigerian to feel real, and food was my approach.
So is it fair to say that this trip made you feel more Nigerian?
it made me feel like I am Nigerian. You know, like it sort of quieted those questions that I had about my identity. And it made me feel like no matter how long I spend away from it or no matter how far away I am from Lagos, like that it's mine.
As I said, that conversation with Yuande happened back in 2018. Now, her new cookbook, My Everyday Lagos, is out. Over the years, she's partnered with other chefs to write their cookbooks, but this is the first with just her name on the cover. So I wanted to hear more about that and get an update on what else has been going on with her. Here we are, Yuande. Hey.
Hi.
It's good to see you.
Yes, it's been a while.
In the last 5 years, Yuande's been back to Lagos several times, had 2 children, and gotten a job as a cooking writer for the New York Times food section. But perhaps most relevant to our earlier conversation,
I am now an American citizen. I
congratulations.
Have a blue passport okay. that says I'm an American citizen.
And there's no special conditions on it?
Like, surprisingly not. They just gave me the passport. Can you believe that? they said, welcome to America.
Again.
Again. And gave me this book, and now I can travel without having to get a visa or any of that paperwork that I had to do before. But yes.
You talked when you had just gotten the green card that the sort of the feelings of anxiety and stress being undocumented didn't float away as quickly as you had hoped. Where are you at with those feelings now?
You're going to find this funny. I walk through the border like I own the shit. I'm like, you can't say shit to me. Yes, I'm American. What do you want? Completely different aura.
So not only have you become an American, you become a New Yorker.
Yeah, oh my God, to the bone.
But the big headline now is that Yuande's cookbook is here. She made reference to the idea of writing a cookbook when we spoke 5 years ago, but it wasn't until a couple years later that she actually started working on it.
I had worked on so many cookbooks, and I realized at some point that I had a story to tell, and it was unlike any other story that I'd seen in food media or the publishing world, and I think I started playing with that idea.
Yuande's immigration status has been key to her being able to write the book because it's enabled her to visit Nigeria multiple times in the last several years for research. She says spending more time there completely changed her perspective of the cuisine.
There's so much nuance to the food culture there. You know, I set my book in Lagos because Lagos acts as a gathering place for so many of Nigeria's different cultures. The food in Lagos keeps evolving. They're doing things that I've never seen before in cooking or in our cuisine. And the food that we cook here in the diaspora is stuck in whatever time we left. And so my aunt, who left in like the 1970s, is cooking food as she remembers, you know, and I'm cooking the food that my grandmother cooked that I remember. But going back to Lagos, they're like, oh, my God, that's the old way to do it. We don't do it.
Right.
We don't do it like that anymore, you know.
Over the years, I've heard similar sentiments from other immigrants. When you leave your home country, your impression of the place you left gets frozen in time, including the food. So as the decades go by and the culture in your home country continues to evolve, you end up with a disconnect between the people who left and the people who stayed. But in recent years, as she's worked on her book, Yuande has been able to reconnect with what's currently happening in Nigeria.
It's been freeing to go back to Lagos and see all the wonderful things. Like, they had puff puff, which is like a fried dough, which every culture has a version of it, but they've been stuffing it. There's like savory puff puff now. There's like version stuffed with like guava jam or, you know, and like that's not something I've ever, like I hesitated to even put sugar in the outside of puff puffs because I'm like, when they sell them with no sugar,
right.
And you know. But it also just frees me up to experiment and make it my own and make it true to my own experience.
Is there a couple dishes that come to mind that you feel like illustrate that from the cookbook?
I can think of Iwuk Edesi, which is also called native rice. It's a rice that's cooked in a very heavy palm oil stew. And so it comes out looking bright orange. It's so lovely and so delicious. It's got all the strong flavors of Nigerian cooking. So there's iru, which is the fermented locust bean. There's crayfish. There's really hot chilies, scotch bonnets. Yeah.
That's my all-time favorite, hot pepper.
So amazing. Yeah. But that dish I cooked in one pot and cooked it with some chicken that had been pan-seared. So I made it into, like, a skillet dinner. But, like, that, like, you wouldn't really see it served that way in Nigeria. You'll probably see it with goat or beef. You know, it's still the same thing, but it's just a different take on it.
Right. I bet it's got so much flavor.
It has so much flavor.
Oh, it sounds so good.
I call the scotch bonnet the iru and the crayfish the holy trinity. So I make a pepper paste that has all of those things that I add to all the dishes throughout the book.
So, Yawande, way back when, there was a couple of dishes that you said were going to be in this cookbook, when it was still just a glimmer in the corner of your eye that had me very amped. Is there a recipe for chili oil with fermented locust beans with garlic and ginger?
Yes, that recipe made it.
All right, amazing.
It's called agoni sauce.
Okay.
Yes.
And then there was pineapple pepper ice cream.
I will give you the recipe for that, but it's not in the cookbook.
All right, it's not in the cookbook.
That was like a dinner only.
Okay, that was a one-off.
That was a one-off.
All right, maybe the next cookbook.
But it sounds delicious. I should have put it in there.
As Yawande wrote her cookbook, one question she grappled with was who her audience was and how she would write for that audience. And this actually relates to another conversation she and I had on this show back in 2020. This was after our original episode about her immigration story. She was already working on the book. And at that time, Yawande wrote a feature for the New York Times on the 10 essential Nigerian recipes. It was part of a series they were doing on a range of cuisines. I played a clip for Yawande from that conversation in 2020.
I've had to work to not write recipes for the white audience because I think that food media is steeped in that. If I'm developing a recipe for Nigerian cuisine, I have to tell you where Lagos is on the map. I have to explain what that red palm oil is not going to kill orangutans. And so I'm going through this process now of, as I'm writing my own cookbook right now, I'm going through this process of like, who am I writing for? Why do I have to explain every single ingredient in here? How much explanation is enough? Should I, you know, like part of it also falls on the consumer to do their own research. Like if you want to cook a recipe from Nigeria, like go do some work, go visit African markets, go ask questions there, you know?
Yeah.
So here you are now at the end of that process. How did you end up navigating those issues?
For sure. I decided somewhere in there, and I think that writing the cookbook actually helped me do this. I decided that I just wanted to write for people who looked like me and people who could relate to the work from a place of knowledge. But also, I tried to like not do it too much that it completely loses an audience that doesn't know anything about the cuisine. But I also want to push that audience to do some work. So I ended up not really explaining a lot. I would put things in the book that were in Yoruba and not explain why I put them in Yoruba. I would have like a definition for it, but that was about it. And so I firmly stood in that space I had arrived at in that interview where I just want to write because the process of like having to stop and explain is inhibiting my creativity.
In that same conversation in 2020, Yawande was asked if she felt more or less optimistic about these issues in food media. I played her response for her.
I think I'm more optimistic because for a long time I was waiting for this industry to create a space for me. And now I'm more of the opinion that like, you know what, fuck it. If you can't make space for me, I will make my own table.
So defiant, Yawande. Yeah.
Yeah. If your kids start giving you attitude, Yawande.
I know where it comes from.
Don't blame Mark.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Does it feel like publishing your first cookbook is sort of you making your own table?
That's such a big thing, you know, like creating your own table. I think that it's an accomplishment of sorts, and I hope that I've made it easier for the Black women, for the Black people who come after me and work within the publishing industry or work within food media. I think that's my focus, is making sure that they are supported in a way that I might not have been. So I guess in a way that is creating a table, I don't know that it's for myself. It's more for like the greater good of humanity, you know. It's more for like Black humanity.
But, you know, who builds a table for one?
Mm, that's true. Yeah.
The point of a table is to gather share. People around
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I had to think through that. But yes, I would say that it's building a table of sorts.
Well, I'll bet the food at that table is going to be delicious.
It's going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be incredible.
That's Yawande Komolafa. Her cookbook, My Everyday Lagos, is out this week and available wherever books are sold. And I'm so glad Yawande finally wrote a cookbook because I needed that chili oil with fermented locust beans and garlic and ginger recipe like years ago. So thank you, Yawande. Also, giveaway alert, you want to win a copy of Yawande's book, all you got to do is subscribe to our newsletter by November 12th and you'll be entered to win this and all of our future giveaways. If you're already a subscriber, you're already entered. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter. Remember to stay tuned for a very big announcement this Wednesday. Then next week on the show, my guest is Sola El Whaley, who talks about tuning out family pressure to follow her dreams and why she thinks culinary school is a scam. That's next week. In the meantime, listen to last week's Salad Spinner episode. We look at why grocery stores might be able to learn something from Bass Pro Shops. And we analyze the foods Taylor Swift demands backstage at her concerts. That's up now. The Sporkful is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
Our intern is
Julia Russo.
Much of this episode was originally produced by Anne Sandy and Aviva de Kornfeld, with editing help from Rob McGinley Myers and mixing by John Delore. Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
This is Whitney Vaughn from Fort Worth, Texas, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.